Hello and welcome. We survived the hurricane.
Yeah.
That's the reason we weren't able to record a podcast last week. Sorry, guys. It just, you know, I had a podcast planned. I was going to do the Central Division. And then I had to get ready for, I had to go buy water. I had to go buy Scooby snacks.
There's pandemonium down here.
Buying water was really difficult.
Yeah. I was taking the Dasani from the guy who's getting out from the back of Walmart like before he could even put it on the pallet. I was like, thank you.
I had to go to a gas station to get like 15 liter bottles of water, and then luckily we didn't need any of it because the hurricane didn't really hit us. Down in South Florida, we got really lucky, so we're back.
Yeah, Chris was at Chance the Rapper last night.
Yes.
He tackled him on stage, I think.
I did not tackle Chance the Rapper.
You did?
Someone did, though. It was Look, Chance is such a joyous person. He brings so much joy into the universe. Why are we tackling him?
It was an aggressive hug.
What's up, Miami? Why are you doing it? It was in the middle of a show. There was a puppet lion, and there were puppet birds that were singing. It was crazy. Well, it was awesome.
Anyways, I paid Chris's bail early this morning and got him here to do the podcast.
We're here to do the podcast.
What are we talking about today?
The Atlantic Division.
Pretty fun division.
It is a kind of a nightmare division. There's two probably good teams? I would say two good teams.
Yeah.
After that, I don't know. I mean, the Raptors and Celtics are good. 76ers, no. Knicks, they got hopes, but I don't think they're going to be good.
They have players.
The Nets might be the worst team in basketball. So the one thing about it is, you know, the Nets and the 76ers specifically will have a lot of fantasy appeal.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of opportunities here with kind of unsettled rotations, stuff like that. So we're going to go through each team as we've done with every division. If you have any questions as you get ready for the start of your either your drafts or get ready for the season, you can hit us up on Twitter at CTowerCBS is me, at JoePo89, JoePo89. 89 is Joe's. Fantasy basketball at CBSI. You can email us as well. If you like the podcast that we're doing, and I hope you do if you're listening, go on and give us a review and a rating on iTunes. We appreciate that.
Tell your basketball nerd friends.
Exactly. Tell your basketball nerd friends.
We know you got them.
The season starts in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Which does not sound right.
No, it's fast approaching.
No, it's crazy. So we're going to get right into it with the Raptors here. And the best team in the division last year, I think they won 56 games last season. They were number two seed in the East, and they didn't really have much change in the offseason. They added Jonas Valanciunas, or Jared Sullinger is their, I believe, their starting power forward now. He started the first few preseason games, so it looks like Patrick Patterson moving to the bench. Other than that, not really much changed on this team. And I think this doesn't really seem like a very interesting fantasy team.
No, it's kind of like you look at their two top options, DeRozan and Lowry, and they're the kind of guys that, you know, in your draft, second round, third round, fourth round probably for DeRozan, you can get them at great value, you know, in comparison to the other players at their position. Now, are you like targeting them? I'm not so sure because they don't have, I mean, Lowry much more so, but you know, not a lot of upside.
And the thing about them is because they're such high usage players, and because this team, you know, last season they would split them up occasionally, and the second unit with Kyle Lowry played really well, but these two guys are going to be on the floor a lot. They're going to dominate the ball, and it just doesn't leave a lot of opportunities for role players to step up. And so DeRozan was a free agent this offseason, and I was hoping he would leave the Raptors because I've been a really big fan of Jonas Valanciunas' offensive game for a while. I think he's got really big fantasy potential. I think he could be like a Brook Lopez type of player in a different role. And it just, does he have the opportunity? That's the first question that I have about this team, is does he have the opportunity to take that step forward on this Raptors team as presently constructed?
It doesn't seem like it because, I mean, he had some great matchups in the playoffs where you really saw what he could do as an inside force, but the league just is not that way, and they're gonna do what they did last year and try and, you know, compete with the Cavs for the top spot. And, you know, like you said, barring a departure of one of their other two backcourt players, he just doesn't play a position where he's gonna, you know, you look at a guy like Hassan Whiteside who can dominate inside without the ball.
Yeah.
And Valanciunas is not that guy. Like, he's going to be very efficient at the free throw line, everything that you would want from your big man, but he kind of needs touches, and he needs to be involved. So, you know, I think he'll be better.
Yeah.
Because he's still, you know, near the prime of his career, but
just 24 years old.
Yeah. So, you know, it's, I'm not like avoiding him, but I wouldn't expect him to break out or anything. What about you?
Yeah, he played a little better in the playoffs, I want to say. Yeah, 13.8 points, 10.8 rebounds, still only 26.8 minutes per game, and that's been the biggest thing for him, is that they've really limited his minutes. They're not ready to let him play 30-plus minutes per game. And so that would be the other way. With DeRozan and Lowry still there, is if they were willing to let Jonas Valanciunas play maybe 4 or 5 minutes more per game, I think he could get up to 15 and 10, kind of the Marcin Gortat area, yep, with maybe, you know, a block and a half, 2 blocks per game. And with his percentages, with his abilities, you know, he doesn't turn the ball over much. He doesn't pass much either, but he's a good free throw shooter, good field goal shooter. It just, right now, these incremental steps forward that he's taken, 11.3 points per game in 2013-14, 12.8. Rebounds have stayed right around the high 8s, low 9s.
It's hard to get excited about it.
Yeah, he's an interesting skill player. I think he's a low-end number one center, someone that you're probably drafting maybe the 6th, 7th round, right, because he doesn't hurt you anywhere. I don't know if he has the upside that his skill set might imply.
And he's kind of a name in fantasy. You've been picking him for the last 4 years,
yeah,
for that time when he's going to take the next step. But it's hard to, you know, reach for him when you could get a Robin Lopez,
yeah,
several rounds later for similar production, I'd say.
One player who did show some breakout potential last season, I think he's a bit of a fantasy sleeper still, and that's Norman Powell. Emerged as a starter for the Raptors late in the season last year. Looking up his monthly stats, he
looked good in the playoffs.
Didn't really do much. Didn't play at all really until March. Emerged as a starter, though. Started 20 of the last 22 games for this team. And in April, especially, 15.3 points, 4.4 rebounds, 2.5 assists. And that's what this team, if you were going to look for another place that a player might break out, it's on the wing. You know, you've got Lowry, you've got DeRozan, but they've got that small forward position that's kind of been open for the last few years. Terrence Ross never really did much with his opportunity. It seems like his chance has kind of passed him by. Damari Carroll had the knee issues last year, didn't really look all that great, shot the ball well, but just was never really healthy. Norman Powell got a chance. If you can get him with one of your last round picks, he's got a chance to emerge as a contributor on the wing for this team.
Definitely, because he does, you know, he's not necessarily a distributor, but he does more than Terrence Ross can do. And he's, you know, looks like he had a pretty good year from the 3-point line, which is pretty much what you're going to want in a shooting guard.
Yes.
So, yeah, he's a great, you know, back end of the draft type of speculation.
The one other, and this is going to depend, if Damari Carroll can bounce back, that's going to hinder Norman Powell's breakout potential. So if you're getting to the later rounds of this draft, are you taking Carroll or are you taking Norman Powell?
I'd probably lean towards Carroll just because I don't think we really got to see what he can do, mm-hmm, when healthy with this team, and he's going to fill a lot of, you know, defensive rebounding corner three type holes that they,
yes,
have. Another thing is the Raptors are just they're going for the championship. I mean, whether you think they have a shot or not, they think
that's
they have
their
a
goal,
shot,
yeah,
and they're not going to give a 22-year-old player, you know, tons of room to grow just for the sake of it.
Yeah, Damari Carroll, what's really interesting about him is he can fill what we saw with Atlanta a couple years ago, is he can fill in at the three and play a big role there. He can hit his three-pointers. He can keep the ball moving. He can attack closeouts. He can also play the small ball four, and that's an opportunity that this team, if he proves healthy, if Norman Powell forces their hand, they could both go with both of them in the starting lineup. You know, they could use Jared Solinger as maybe the backup five if he doesn't work out, because frankly, I don't think Jared Solinger is going to work out. Do you have any interest in drafting Jared Solinger this year on the Raptors?
No. I mean, if he was somehow stretching it out to three and hitting, you know, a decent amount of those, like, he will shoot them. But, you know, he hasn't quite proven that he... Because it seems like he's an okay rebounder.
Yeah, very good rebounder.
Not a lot of space for rebounds with Valanciunas,
mm-hmm,
clogging the middle.
Yeah, I mean, you look at... He will take his three-pointers. He's attempted 500 in his career.
Exactly.
He's shooting 27.6%. I don't know. I don't think he's a power forward. I know positions don't matter. I don't think you can play him and Jonas Valanciunas together all that often. I think the defense is going to suffer. You're really going to have to rebound like crazy to play those two guys. And I just...
And he plays down low, and he does he get any blocks? Does he block shots? Mm. Has he ever blocked a shot?
He had 47 last year.
Okay.
Which was too short of his career high. He'll get about a block per game, actually, apparently.
That's surprising.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how that happens.
But they kind of like to go with Patrick Patterson for long stretches, too.
Yes. And,
I mean, he's not like anything to get excited about for fantasy, but when you're thinking about taking a rolling the dice on Jared Sullinger or even reaching for Damari Carroll, you just got to think about they're a kind of deep team that, yeah. Like you said, didn't have a lot of turnover, and they're going to try and just build on what they did last year.
Yeah. I think the one guy from this team that didn't make a big impact last year that could this year is probably Damari Carroll, just because injuries really held him back. One team that did have not a ton of turnover, but they made one big addition.
Yeah.
That was the Boston Celtics. They got, what, the second biggest free agent of the offseason?
Probably.
Yeah, Kevin Durant went to the Warriors. Al Horford signed with the Celtics in a pretty surprising move. I think that was a weird day because it seemed like all signs were pointing to him returning to Atlanta. I think, like, Woj reported that the Atlanta Hawks expected him to re-sign, and then like 3 minutes later, Al Horford tweeted like a shamrock or something.
Yeah, hadn't they already gotten Howard at that point?
Yes.
I don't see how you expected him to come back after you got Dwight Howard, but
they did. So Al Horford, the big addition for the Boston Celtics, they lost Jared Sullinger. They added Jaylen Brown, the number 3 overall pick in this year's draft. Very talented player.
Yeah, you like him a lot for fantasy this year, don't you?
No. I don't like Jaylen Brown at all.
Oh, I thought you meant Al Horford.
Oh, I like Al Horford a ton, yeah. We'll get to Jaylen Brown. I'm just running through the roster changes for this team. You know, added Gerald Green as a backup shooting guard. But for the most part, it's really just Al Horford swapping out Jared Sullinger for him. But it's going to be mostly the same. This is actually a team that needs to make a ton of moves before the... before the start of the season. They've got like 17 or 18 guys under contract. You can only have 15. You can move some of them to the D League, but
they have like 45 guards.
Yeah, they have way too much. This is a team that they're weird because they have depth. They have young guys.
Yeah, they're kind of almost trying to do too many things as a franchise.
Yes, they're primed for. They're still primed for a trade. They're still primed to package a bunch of these guys, consolidate their assets, and move them into, you know, DeMarcus Cousins or someone when that becomes available, if it does. And but for right now, we go into the season with a starting lineup that looks a lot like it did last year with Al Horford and Jared. Basically, Jared Sullinger is like a C-minus version of Al Horford at everything.
Yeah.
You know, he'll shoot his jumpers, but Al Horford actually makes them. Al Horford is a very good fantasy center. And do you think with his new role in Boston, he can take a step forward even?
Yeah, I do, because I think when you look at, you know, the Hawks were kind of, you know, we just talked about the Raptors kind of doing what they do. The Hawks the Hawks kind of fell into that sort of no room to grow. And now Horford going to a young team,
yeah,
surrounded by, you know, hungry, scrappy players, I think he's going to be looked to as the guy, pretty much. I mean, you looked at what they had some success last year kind of stringing it together with lots of different rotations, but he's going to be the staple of their offense. He's still, you know, going to be their largest player. So defense, yeah, some blocks. I mean, I like him a lot this year because he's efficient. He hits free throws. You know,
he had that weird period towards the middle of his career when he kind of stopped hitting three free throws, was under 70% for 2 years in a row.
But you know, the skill is there.
Bounced back to almost 80% last season. And with Horford, you look at his career, he's been right around 15 points for the most part, but he did have 2012, 2013, and 2013-14 when he was healthy that year, where he averaged right around 18 points, right around 10 rebounds, 3 assists, a block, a steal.
So would you take him ahead of Draymond Green?
That's a really...
It's a tough one.
I'm so curious about what the Warriors are going to look like. I'm not sure... You know, somebody's going to have to take a step back. Probably all four of their big stars are going to have to take a step back, because you're looking at four guys who were probably top 20 players last season for fantasy.
They're definitely, you know, situationally, they're going in different directions, where Draymond Green,
yeah,
losing touches, Horford probably gaining.
probably depends on what my team looks like with my first pick or two, depending on where I'm taking them. I think I would go Draymond, but he's
in the, you know, late second round, mid second round discussion.
Yes, late second, early third. If you really think Al Horford, because the thing that you have to look at with him is, there are not many centers that can give you, there are not many players in NBA history who can give you 100 three-pointers and 100 blocks in a season. Al Horford has the chance to do that. Last season, he made 88 three-pointers. He hit 34.4% of them. So he's a good three-point shooter. And this Boston team has allowed their big men, like we talked about with Jared Sullinger, they've given their big men the green light from three. And, you know, maybe with Al Horford playing as a focal point of the offense more, maybe he won't have quite as many opportunities to spot up and shoot those threes.
But he'll get to the free throw line. I kind of look at what Pau Gasol did for the Bulls last year, sure, where they were just, you know, he's kind of good at everything, and you know, you weren't sure if it was going to work out with that team. So Horford's going to a better situation, and he's a similar all-around fundamental type player.
As your number one center, Al Horford's really good. He's not a star in the, like, he's not going to dominate like maybe Hassan Whiteside will in blocks. Yeah. But he helps you out across the board, and he's got a great opportunity here. The rest of this team, though, it feels kind of set. You know, Isaiah Thomas running the point, Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder playing big minutes on the wings. They're going to run a bunch of different power forwards out there, Amir Johnson, Jonas Jerebko, Kelly Olynyk, all these guys that are, you know, Jay Crowder is going to play the four from time to time as well. Jaylen Brown might be able to. But so it's really just about who among the young guys can step forward. And for me, the most obvious question is, can Marcus Smart break out? And the evidence so far
for fantasy, it doesn't seem like it.
Yeah.
You know, he's not in a situation where if he was getting point guard minutes, he could really, you know, run the show and distribute. He showed some all of the sudden three-point acumen in the playoffs, if you remember, like, just somehow couldn't miss. But otherwise, he's been one of the worst shooters ever.
And even that, 34.4%, yeah, he shot 37%.
Well, that was a huge step.
Yeah, that's a big improvement, because he's a 29.6% three-point shooter, slightly better than Jared Sullinger. But he's coming off a season, Marcus Smart, where he averaged 9.1 points, 4.2 rebounds, 3 assists, 1.5 steals. He's useful,
yes,
for fantasy, especially in Roto, but, you know, this was a number six overall pick 2 years ago. He's still only 22.
It's just the kind of things that he's good at. Again, you know, the NBA isn't that sport. Like, if it was a sport where they posted guards,
yeah,
he would be great. But
he's kind of a power guard anymore. He's a strong, he's a bulldog guy. But if you're looking for a breakout candidate,
yeah, I would much rather speculate on Jay Crowder than Marcus Smart.
Yeah, the thing there is, Jay Crowder's probably going to go first five rounds in your Roto leagues, because he's a good defender.
But it's a little bit of a leap of faith, because, I mean, he's good. He produces, but, you know, if you're expecting him to do better than, like, a Rudy Gay just because he's younger or something like that, I think you could get into a bit of trouble.
Jay Crowder is one of those guys that I think people might get ahead of themselves with. He's coming off a season where he averaged 14.2 points, 5 rebounds, 1.8 assists, 1.7 steals. 1.7 three-pointers per game. He's going to shoot a lot of three-pointers. He's going to play big minutes. I like Jay Crowder.
Yeah, I end up picking him a lot just because he's fun. There's definitely some upside.
But Marcus Smart, the talent there, I'm not sure the opportunity is there. And there's that gap between talent and ability. And for him, it's pretty wide. And I think he needs to bridge that gap and have the opportunity in order to make a real fantasy impact. And so, you know, as a number four guard, as maybe your second or third flex player, Marcus Smart has the ability to contribute, you know, three-pointers in volume.
Yeah, because like you said, he can do a lot. So you look at Justice Winslow now as in a place where he has to do all those little athletic things that are going to be useful for fantasy. But you put Justice Winslow on a super deep team, you know, is he going to find the minutes and the space?
So
to
would
do
you
that?
Rather have Winslow or Marcus Smart?
Definitely Winslow. Because
just
the situation is much better. And the position, too. I mean, when you're drafting a guard, you're looking for three-pointers, assists. Those are not his areas.
Yeah.
But, you know, a couple injuries take place in the backcourt, or like you said, they make the moves that they have to, all of a sudden Marcus Smart maybe has some room to grow. But I'm probably not drafting him.
And we'll the last one we'll talk about is that number three overall pick, Jaylen Brown.
He's too young.
Talented, has the athletic base to turn into a good player. But his 1 year in California at Cal was pretty rough. He averaged 14.6 points, 5.4 rebounds, 2 assists, shot 43% from the field, 29.4% from three-pointers. And it sounds like 29.4% might be his ceiling on three-pointers right now. It's just he's really athletic. He looks like an NBA player.
Definitely.
In all the kind of vague ways that right. matters.
He looks awesome when he tries to dunk.
He's not going to be 20 until the day before the season starts, so there's still plenty of room to grow. And if you're doing a dynasty league, I think you can target him in the middle rounds. He has the potential to grow into either a small ball four or, my concern might be that he's just Jeff Green.
Yeah, he looks like he has a knack for scoring, getting the ball in near the basket. But again, in fantasy, you're looking for efficiency. You're looking for a multitude of things. And
in yearly leagues, it's just he's not going to have the opportunity
No.
We'll move on to the 76ers. There is a ton of opportunity here.
This is the land of opportunity.
This is, and it's been the case for 4 years. This is year four of...
Looking at Tony Roten, Covington.
I don't think this is year four of the process. I think we're in a different...
It's a new phase.
A different process. It did seem like they were going to enter the season with a fairly set identity. This was going to be a team that had too many big men, but... What they had was they were going to have productive big men. They were going to have Ben Simmons running the point, running the offense, racking up the numbers that would come with that. They were going to have a spot-up shooter at the point guard spot with Jared Bayless. They were going to have Robert Covington, Gerald Henderson on the wings. Ben Simmons' injury changes a lot for this team. This is kind of like, I talked a couple weeks ago with Matt Moore about Chris Middleton's injury. And... that's an injury that really changes the outlook of the entire team for Milwaukee. I think Ben Simmons is kind of the same way because he was going to play big minutes at the three and the four, and he was going to be the only real playmaker on this team. He definitely had the ball in his hand a lot. He was going to have the ball in his hands. He had the highest ceiling as a playmaker. This offense, whatever it was going to do it because of Ben Simmons. There's a chance he doesn't play this season. He broke his foot in practice about 10 days ago. Had surgery. It ended up being a Jones fracture in the fifth metatarsal, which is the one that Kevin Durant had. It's the one that Dez Bryant had in the NFL. This is a tricky injury. We saw Kevin Durant had the injury around the same time as Ben Simmons, early October, late September. Was back on the court in 2 months. For about a month.
Yeah.
Then he had surgery. Then he tried to come back and had another surgery.
Everything you read and, just what you know about the Sixers, he doesn't seem to be a factor in yearly fantasy this year.
Yeah, if he comes back, you're probably looking at January at the earliest. But that would be really optimistic. It's hard to see him missing the entire year for specific injury reasons. This is not an injury that requires what would end up being a 7 or 8 month recovery process. This is not a torn ACL or an injury like
but
that.
It's a very young, promising player on
a
team.
It's a young player on a team
not
that's
going anywhere.
Very patient.
Soon.
There, it's a situation where this is a very tricky injury that can tend to cause setbacks. So when you're looking at Ben Simmons in your dynasty leagues, I think he's still a top two round player. Probably not a first rounder. But you look at what he could become. Last year's Draymond Green is the best case. Well, not the best case scenario. I think the best case scenario is like Blake Griffin, but with more assists. I think Ben Simmons could be that good, and that's an easy first round pick in fantasy.
Yeah.
But you've got the Jones fracture now. It's a tricky injury. You've got questions about his shooting. So I think the most likely outcome for him is like a borderline all-star Draymond Green type of player.
Some leagues offer an injury spot.
Yes.
He's a great candidate for that because, that's what that spot is for.
If you've got an IR spot and you're drafting, I think you can start looking at him around 100. That's kind of the 100 overall is kind of where I've put like Jrue Holiday, Tyreke Evans, Chris Bosh before the
guys,
Heat said they
guys that you know are good but may not play half the season.
Guys that could be stars and could hit it big for you, but it's just it's hard to invest a real starting spot in them. If you don't have an IR spot, it gets really hard to draft Ben Simmons. The question that comes from the Ben Simmons injury is now who's going to play point guard for this team? I think the expectation was that Jared Bayless would start at point guard, and that might still be what ends up happening.
But the, in the sense that he's the smallest player on the floor and will be kind of dribbling a lot, but in terms of who's filling the playmaking role, I think, I don't know, I think there's a couple different ways you could go with it. Do you think Dario Saric steps into a sizable role
there,
now?
There's definitely a chance. Now, the thing with Dario Saric is his jumper is better than Ben Simmons was, and so if they were willing to play Ben Simmons at three, there's that doesn't necessarily disqualify Dario Saric, but I think he's a little... He's not quite the athlete that Ben Simmons was, so it might be hard to get away with him. Guarding other players on the wing, I think it just... It really... With Dario Saric, it more depends on what they want to do with the center position.
So what do you think their, you know, actual starting lineup looks like once they have it kind of pinned down? Maybe they experiment a little at the beginning, but... Who do you think shakes to the top of this? Because I'm looking at, I mean, looking at guys like Covington, like Jeremy Grant, who is extremely productive in limited minutes. The Gerald Henderson isn't, you know, exciting for fantasy, but he's a guy who sort of gets it done from a basketball sense and is going to demand minutes.
I could see
Sergio Rodriguez, newcomer, point guard position, veteran.
The point guard position is the one that's hardest to figure out. I think Sergio Rodriguez might be my favorite of the three. I would hope that he gets the most minutes, but you know, in the preseason, we've seen TJ McConnell start. Jared Bayless might not be ready for the start of the season with a wrist injury, so it's possible that TJ McConnell or Sergio Rodriguez is starting at point guard to start the season. I would guess Gerald Henderson is the starting two. Robert Covington, probably the favorite to play the three. Really underrated fantasy player.
Yeah, I think you just, kind of the bottom line is you want somebody on this team on your fantasy
team. Yeah, you definitely want somebody.
You kind of pick your favorite lottery ticket.
Yeah, and
there's a lot of them.
Yeah,
Embiid. What, I mean,
I think, we'll get to Embiid. Sergio Rodriguez and Jared Bayless, I think, are the two guys you probably want to draft in the last few rounds. As a backup guard, see if one of them hits and can give you, you know, 13 points and 6 assists per game. There's value there. I like Robert Covington in the middle rounds, especially in Roto. Gerald Henderson as a late round guy could maybe give you 13 points, 4 assists per game.
Yeah, the problem is he doesn't quite stretch it to the 3-point line.
No, he does not.
And he's a good rebounder and actually kind of a sneaky shot blocker from time to time, but yeah, he's not doing what you want from that position.
And then the front court's a mess.
A mess of upside.
Sure. So the most important question.
How many minutes will Elton Brand get? 6?
He is on this roster. Elton Brand is on this roster.
What if they just play him a ton?
The question is, how good can Joel Embiid be? I'm doing a dynasty draft right now. It's just me. I'm just drafting for all 12 teams, trying to make every team fit.
Such an ego on you.
I took Joel Embiid in the 3rd round of this dynasty draft. And
well, of course you did. You're the only one drafting.
It could be... I could go either way. You know, I could see taking him in the 2nd round in Dynasty. If you really think this guy could be like Anthony Davis, Karl Anthony Towns good, and I think he was that kind of prospect.
And I think if you're doing that, you're almost, you know, banking on them trading one of the other two.
That's the question. And I think that has to happen. And the weird thing about this team is last year they played Nerlens Noel and Jahlil Okafor together a lot. It didn't work, and now Nerlens Noel, coming into this season, has been he's been talking publicly about how they need to make a trade, which is a weird thing for a 22-year-old kid to do.
But he's right.
But he is one of the veterans on this team entering year 3.
Yeah. He's seen so much.
But what he's been saying is that they have 3 centers.
Yeah.
And which I think kind of tells you that this team probably views Dario Saric, Jeremy Grant, and Robert Covington, perhaps, as their 4s. More so than Nerlens Noel, Joel Embiid, or Jahlil Okafor. And that creates a real roster crunch at the 5.
Who they decide to trade will tell you also a lot about what they think of the rest of the roster, because if they trade Jahlil Okafor, then they're saying, okay, we have faith in Embiid's health and his, you know, ability to play a season, basically. If they don't and they trade Noel, then it's kind of like, okay, Okafor and Embiid are both these very large, you know, not super quick staples of an offense.
Yeah.
And they're not, I don't think they're really going to thrive next to each other. They're both talented players, but it seems like the much more clear fit would be Noel and Embiid.
Yeah.
You know, in the same front court. Maybe they trade both Noel and Okafor because they want to go with this smaller Ben Simmons type. There's a lot that can happen.
There's a lot of moving pieces, and it's why, you know, Noel especially could be an elite roto player. He could be a you know, on the Rudy Gobert level in terms of his ability to block shots, get steals, get rebounds, but it's just not clear what his playing time is going to look like. You know?
And if you are playing him and starting him, you're tanking free throws immediately in categories.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're also gambling on will the minutes shake out to where he gets to achieve his value
and
with
so
any other stats.
I'm probably taking Noel first out of those three. I think Embiid's probably second. And it wouldn't surprise me if Joel Embiid starts going like fifth or sixth round next week. We're 2 weeks away from the start of the season. He's looked pretty good in the preseason. And he's looked like the guy that we thought he would be. He actually hit a three-pointer the other day, and he's popping out for three-pointers on the pick and roll. He's only taken two in three games, but it's still, it's something he's looking for. He's stretching his range out there. But the athleticism has been there. He had a, I think against the Cavaliers the other day, there was one where Kay Felder drove right at him. And Ben Simmons is, or Joel Embiid's just kind of moving laterally. Kay Felder drives up into him. He just puts his arm out and just kind
of. That's the joy of being 7'2".
Well, that's the. And being
coordinated.
A foot and a half taller than the guy that you're guarding as well. But Joel Embiid looks like he could. He really looks like he could be one of those generation defining talents. He could be a Karl Anthony Towns, Anthony Davis type of player. So that's.
And Sixers are in need of some. Good PR, and that's what this guy is. He's hilarious. He's fun to root for, so you'll love that when you draft him. But also, like, they're gonna try and give him an opportunity to succeed, and for Embiid sort of flowering to be the story of their season, and not, you know, number one
overall.
Who
we're gonna pick
injured,
next year? Yeah.
You know,
and the,
we're bad again. Who are we gonna trade?
The thing you do have to keep in mind with him is he's had two broken feet. The first one didn't heal properly, so they had to do another procedure. Huge risk, has missed the first 2 years of his NBA career. Likely to sit out back to backs to start the season at least, maybe all season. And you could be looking at a situation where even if Joel Embiid's completely healthy for the entire season, he might miss every back to back just to be safe. And so you're already looking at, you know, there might be a ceiling of 65 games for Joel Embiid this season.
But I think there's a lot of fantasy useful players that you kind of lump into that boat when you talk about, like, they talked about that for Marcus Saul, or they talked, you know, Dwayne Wade misses a lot. There's a lot of these, like, mainstay type guys.
But you look at, like, Dwayne Wade, maybe he's more likely to play 65 games, but he played 74 last season. So that. Whereas Embiid, like, if his best case scenario is 65,
right? Maybe he only plays 40.
Maybe he only plays 50 because he sprains an ankle and misses 2 weeks, or maybe he misses, you know, tears a labrum in his shoulder. All of a sudden, he misses a month, and then that's why it might be a situation where I end up not drafting Joel Embiid that often, even though I really like him.
Yeah, no,
in my year leagues, because it just might be a place where the hype just completely outpaces what he's actually capable of this season. But he's going to be playing 20-24 minutes per game by the start of the season.
Pick your favorite Sixer. Don't reach for him, but
and
you
really,
know.
If you take Nerlens Noel or Jahlil Okafor in the middle rounds, and they do get traded right before the season, all of a sudden that looks like a great value. So that's something to keep in mind with those guys as well. The Knicks, they had a big offseason. They did change their roster up a lot. Basically, what? 3/5 of the starting lineup will be new. Derrick Rose at point guard, Courtney Lee at shooting guard, Joakim Noah at center. In terms of talent, you figure Joakim Noah is an upgrade on Robin Lopez. Derrick Rose is an upgrade over Jose Calderon or Jerian Grant or Langston Galloway or whoever they had out there. But this is a team with a ton of questions. Not least of which is, can you rely on Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah?
Yeah, I don't know. I think Noah's a little more intriguing to me.
Yeah.
Just because triangle offense might suit him a little bit. He's a good passer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he can handle when he needs to, hand off situations, and, you know, we haven't seen him get a full opportunity because of injuries and things like that. So, whereas Derrick Rose, even when healthy, is a terribly inefficient point guard who doesn't really assist at a high rate.
Yeah, so. Played better in the second half of last season after, I believe, he had another torn meniscus last season. Missed a bunch of time yet again. I don't think he's someone that not there's not a ceiling. He could conceivably play all 82 games.
I mean, he's a former MVP.
Like there's no actual limit, but it's Derrick Rose. He's probably going to miss 20 games, and that's in a good scenario. And even when he was playing better last season in the second half, he was averaging right around 17 points, but it was like 4 or 5 assists per game. He wasn't playing all that well. He's made a lot of noise this offseason about wanting, not being able to play point guard in Chicago, how he had to score. And he's talked a lot about how in New York with Courtney Lee, with Carmelo Anthony, with Kristaps Porzingis, it's going to allow him to play more point guard. I'm not buying it.
Yeah, he's got more options in theory, but the offense is not point guard friendly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a...
Jeff Hornacek has... They do have a new coach, Jeff Hornacek, and he's talked about, you know, kind
modifying
of...
modifying it a little bit.
Yeah, like Steve Kerr runs like a modified triangle.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of triangle elements in the Warriors offense, but they play fast, they pass the ball, they shoot a lot of threes, which all three of those have not been things that the Knicks have done over the last few years. I don't think I have much interest in drafting Derrick Rose.
So would you rather have him or Elfrid Payton?
Elfrid Payton.
What about Moutier?
Moutier.
These are some young guns. Monte Ellis doesn't even play point guard necessarily.
Derrick Rose.
But,
okay. I would rather have Derrick Rose than Monte. I think Monte took a step back last season. There's definitely more upside with Derrick Rose.
George Hill. Avery Bradley. See, the thing with Rose is like...
Bradley. Yeah. I would rather have Bradley.
Wow.
I'm going to get three-pointers for... I know I'm going to get three-pointers. I know I'm going to get steals from Avery Bradley.
Rose will depend a lot on the makeup of your team. You're going to be more willing to take a risk on him, you know, middle rounds if you...
I'm not 100%
sure. You have a lot
sure.
of solid players that aren't going to get hurt. And
I'm not 100% sure I'd rather have Derrick Rose than Deron Williams.
Yeah, Deron Williams is going like to be strong value.
They might be the same guy. They're both going to go late. It probably depends on Derrick Rose is probably going to go in the middle round or in the late rounds. That's the good thing is that you're not going to have to invest
Derrick
highly.
Rose or Tony Parker?
Derrick Rose. There's more upside there. But for both Rose and Noah, they're going to go relatively late. You're probably not going to have to draft Noah as a starting center. And so that's the good thing with Noah is if he can get back to not even the, he finished third in MVP, I think, 3 years ago. Joakim Noah was really good, and he was averaging,
it was
14,
the assists that were
Yeah, it was the 14 points, 11 rebounds, a couple of blocks, but like 4 or 5 assists per game. And even last season, his knees were shot. He, was not in shape, couldn't really play big minutes, was playing around 20 minutes a game. Still averaged almost 4 assists per game.
And he hustles. He's going to get the boards somehow. He's going to get those blocks somehow.
He's going to get rebounds. He's going to get blocks. I like drafting Joakim Noah as, like, if I drafted a center early and then I want to just wait and grab a backup or a number two center late, I think Joakim Noah is a good target there.
And he's so willing to not be the focal point, and he is surrounded by guys who do want to be the focal point. So it is a really good situation for him. You wonder if the Miles catch up with him, but, opportunity's there.
And the Miles definitely caught up with him last season.
What about Brandon Jennings?
I like him as a sleeper. I have already started to see some speculation, mostly among Knicks fans and kind of Knicks bloggers, that Brandon Jennings might be the better player than Derrick Rose at this point in their careers. More, I don't know if I buy that.
Maybe more useful for what they're doing. But.
Yeah, I don't know if I buy it just because Jennings is a better shooter. I think he's probably a better passer than Derrick Rose. But the Achilles injury is so tough to come back from that there's no guarantee Brandon Jennings is ever going to be the same guy he was. And it wasn't that good.
So it's not a situation where you would draft both of them because if one gets hurt, the other gets the minutes because they're kind of risky in the same way.
But. Yeah, I'm fine with taking a flyer on Jennings late. I probably would imagine he goes undrafted in most leagues, though.
Would you rather have him or Jared Bayless? Like end of the draft. Point
Jennings or Bayless?
Yeah.
Bayless.
Okay. Better opportunity.
Yeah, and right now Joakim Noah is currently going 106th overall The 20th center off the board. So I really like the value there, because you look at like the centers that are going around him. Jahlil Okafor is the 19th center on average. This is from fantasypros.com's average ADP from across the injury. So it's Okafor, Joakim Noah, Alex Len, and Robin Lopez. I might rather have Lopez than Noah. He's a little safer. He's just kind of a solid guy.
In a categories league, Robin Lopez fills a lot of needs in a very minimal sense, but Noah does it in a similar way with a lot more upside and risk.
And Derrick Rose going 78th overall right now. That's too high for me. You know, there's going to be a lot of guards that go early, and that makes sense. But I can't see myself that's, you're looking at a middle seventh round pick.
Yeah, I think the Darren Williams thing was, you kind of nailed it. It's like you could get Darren Williams a round later than you get Derrick Rose.
Yeah, maybe two minimum. Rounds later.
And why wouldn't you do that for similar injury risk, similar, you know.
There's more upside with Rose.
Yeah, but it's kind of in a scoring sort of volume way, whereas you know Williams is a better shooter, a better passer. You know, they kind of leaned on him last year to be the point guard full time.
Yeah.
So this is a better opportunity.
And then the one last one, the most exciting player on this team by far, I think, is Kristaps Porzingis.
Seen him going quite early in some drafts.
He should. I think he's... I don't feel great about him in the second round, although I think I did have him going in the second round in that dynasty mock. Because, you know, when you talk about the future of the center position at the NBA, in the NBA, and Porzingis is, I guess, a power forward, but he could play either one. It looks exactly like Karl-Anthony Towns. Like, if you were designing a future, a modern 2016 center in a laboratory, it's Karl-Anthony Towns. But, like, the next version is Kristaps Porzingis. Gotcha. You know, he's 7 foot two. He's got range out to the 3-point line. He's already talking about improving his playmaking, his ability to attack off closeouts. He's super athletic. He blocks shots. You're looking at a player with a ceiling eventually of 20, 10, you know, 120 made three-pointers, 120 blocks. Like, there's two blocks per game even.
So here's an interesting question. Categories league, you picking Carmelo Anthony or Kristaps Porzingis? Same team. One's clearly got the pedigree. The other one, you know, has the promise, but what do you do? I think Carmelo is kind of the biggest thing in KP's way of being that superstar.
Yeah, no, I'm not expecting... I would say Porzingis, if I'm looking at this season, it's probably more like 15 point, like a lot like what he did last season, really. And last season was kind of up and down. I think he cooled off a little bit as the season went on, but I would probably rather have Carmelo Anthony for the small forward eligibility. If you're looking at just forward, then it gets a little more questionable.
Yeah, that's true, because Porzingis can play power forward, which would be a lot more useful because center's pretty deep. You can, like we just talked about Noah, you can find center the back end of your draft. They're 30 and 31 in the consensus ADP.
Mm-hmm.
So it's right there for most people, too. I think when you look at the Knicks, though, the thing that frustrates me the most is he's clearly the best player on the floor. And
Porzingis?
Yeah.
If not, it's close.
The four other guys, you know, I think Noah being there will actually be great for him because he's the one guy who's going to realize, like, okay, this kid is awesome. Yeah. We need to get him the ball. But everybody else kind of has their own agenda, it seems like.
Well, you know, like Courtney Lee and Joakim Noah are great fits. Like, if you have your superstar players, Courtney Lee and Joakim Noah are such great fits to put around them because they're able to fill in the gaps. But Derrick Rose and Carmelo Anthony are kind of the opposite of that. Like, Carmelo Anthony and Derrick Rose are blunt instruments of force. They are guys that you just shoot. They're just going to shoot. Derrick Rose is going to drive.
You know, Free throws, etc. Yeah.
And it's just kind of, they're both kind of standing in the way of Kristaps.
But even in the preseason with not those guys on the floor, it's like Kristaps kind of just has to like beg to get the ball on the three-point line and things like that. Like, it seems weird how underutilized he is. So I really hope that changes because that's what is opening him up to, you know, possible top 15 player. Yeah. Whereas, you know,
I feel really good about him middle to late of the third round and later. Might have to take him in the early third round, and that's where things get a little dicey with Kristaps. We'll move on to...
Real quick. Courtney Lee. Any kind of sleeper appeal because he's combo guard-ish. Point guards break...
He is what he is, I think. You know, and what he is can be a useful fantasy player. because he'll hit threes. He can get some defensive numbers.
He's more of a waiver wire guy, though.
Yeah, low end, borderline roster. If you start him, he doesn't hurt you. If you cut him, you're not going to miss him.
I think a lot of teams dealing with injury probably picked him up last year down the stretch, but just you're right, too early to speculate on him.
Yeah. Move on to, I think it's fair to say, the worst team in the NBA.
It's you kind of forget that they are a team.
I mean, you look at the names on this roster. Yogi Ferrell is on their depth chart right now. Chase Budinger is on this team. Somebody named Bo Beach.
That's second best name to Cat Barber, for sure.
E. Dot Makovich. Man, I'm an NBA junkie. I don't know what his first name is. I've never heard of this person. I'm an NBA junkie. I live on NBA Twitter. I have never heard of like at least four of the guys on this depth chart.
Yeah, they're
from RealGM.com.
The Brooklyn Nets is the team.
The Brooklyn Nets.
Speaking of, yes. And when one of their media day photos went around, the Twitter comments were quite laughable. If you want to go check those out.
Yeah, you've got you've got Brooke Lopez.
Yeah, you know him.
Solid, dependable fourth round pick, Brooke Lopez, and you just hope he stays healthy because if he does, you're getting 20-10 and 2 blocks per game out of him. I mean, he's a really good value center. After that, there's a lot of question marks. Mm-hmm. Jeremy Lin, I think, is going to be one of the best breakout players of this season, though. I think
he's kind of got the recipe to be drafted right where he's going to be, though. You know what I mean? Like, he was hot in the playoffs and then went to a terrible team.
Well, right now, at fantasypros.com, he's being drafted 91st overall as the 41st guard, right in front of Deron Williams. You look at some of the other players he's being drafted behind. He's being drafted behind Steven Adams, Otto Porter, Zach Randolph. I think Jeremy Lin's going to be a great value. We've seen in his time in Houston, he can still, you know, Lin Sanity is never happening again. He's not a star, but he's a very solid player, and especially on a team like this that just doesn't have anything, he's going to have free reign. He's going to run a ton of pick and rolls with Brooke Lopez. They're going to put a bunch of role players around them. They're going to have, you know, Bohan Bogdanovic is going to be out there spacing the floor. I think there's a real opportunity here for Jeremy Lin. Honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if he averaged like 17-7 this season.
And he's a guy that if you're going to pick one of the, you know, awful free throw shooting, volume, rebound, block guys, Drummond, etc., you get Jeremy Lin, you know.
Gets to the free throw line a ton.
Right. I think he could be, you know, especially on this team, like from what I saw from him in the playoffs, like he could be, you know, top 10 at least, maybe higher in free throws. So he can help balance that. He's an 80% shooter.
I think, you know, that's a good point. If you do want to go into your draft and get DeAndre Jordan, you know, if people start letting him slip into the fourth or fifth round, which I've seen happen, he's elite as a center, except for the free throw shooting. Now, it's really hard to make up for that, but if you ended up getting, like, James Harden, Kemba Walker, and Jeremy Lin, now you can start almost making up for that.
And you do have to make a conscious decision of whether, once you do that, you make that leap, you're like, okay, rest of my guys got to be high-volume free-throw, efficient players, or you just absolutely punt it, which, you know, is also a theory. But, yeah, I think you're right. Lin has, you know, the sky's the limit almost.
Yeah, I think there's a really good chance that he ends up as a top 25 guard this season, and you're not going to have to draft him as one. So that I think on draft day he's going to be a real value and someone I'm comfortable drafting in the seventh or eighth round. I'd much rather have him than Derrick Rose.
Yeah, absolutely. Because he's, you know, like you said, he's going to score. He's one of those weird. He's a point guard that is kind of score first, but can still get it done in the assist column. That's kind of a rare combo.
The rest of this team,
who?
I like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. I think he's someone as a sleeper you can draft with, you know, maybe your last pick or your second to last pick. I think there's a little bit of like poor man's Gerald Wallace with him.
Okay.
Maybe like Charlotte version of Gerald Wallace, like when you were getting like a ton of rebounds from him, but pretty good playmaking, good defensive numbers.
There are going to be bricks. There's going to be stats to be had there.
Hollis Jefferson averaged 9 rebounds per 36 minutes last season. Missed most of the season with a fractured ankle. Only ended up playing about 30 games. But 2.5 assists per 36, 2 steals per 36, almost a block per 36. There's a lot of minutes available here for him. I also like Caris LeVert.
Yeah, I think he's a deep sleeper. I think he's a little too raw to... I think in 12-team league, I don't think you can...
No.
You definitely watch him on the waiver wire.
It's not even clear. Sucks, but. It's not even clear if he's going to be able to play to start the season.
Yeah, he's coming off
injury. 2 foot injuries. Yeah. I believe he had the Jones fracture as well. It's not clear if he's going to be ready for the start of the season. But this is a team that's going to have some fantasy sleepers come out.
Oh, you know? Bohan Bogdanovic. I think I would draft him.
Bogdanovic was very good for them last season, was a high-volume shooter, a really good shooter. He's someone that's worth looking at. Grievous Vasquez is on this team. He's someone worth looking at.
Especially if Lynn, you know, goes all out and tries to average 25 points a game, then they're going to need a little more ball handling support. Yeah. They could play both of them.
Beyond that, it's mostly just going to be watching. Sean Kilpatrick, Chris McCullough have opportunities, but it's really just going to be to see who shows up in the first week and grabs a role and shows enough to at least, you know, there might not be more than like 7 NBA caliber players on this team. They could be like new 76ers kind of.
Seems like it. The 76ers of like 3 years ago where they're kind of a revolving door.
Yeah.
I think Bogdanovic, I'm looking at his numbers now, you know, per 36, over 2 threes per game. I think he's going to get the minutes. He's about 26 years old, so he's kind of in that range where they're going to need a lot out of him.
Yeah.
I think if I'm looking for a shooter, you know, late in the draft, he's the guy for me because he can shoot. He shoots at a nice rate, I think like 40-something percent.
38.2 last season, 83% free throw shooter, so he is someone – as a specialist in free throws and three-point shooting later to fill out your
team. Doesn't do a whole lot else, but he's going to score. He's going to hit threes. So, you know, you're looking at the Kyle Korvers of the world who are probably going to get scooped up for their name. This is a guy who's maybe a little similar.
Nice specialist at the end of your draft. But for the Nets, it's mostly going to be you might have to, like, actually watch a Nets game early in the season. And
good luck.
You know, make sure you've got some alcohol and see who shows really –
Anything.
That's what it's going to come down to with this team. They're going to be bad. They're going to be one of the worst teams, if not the worst team in the NBA. And that's
I think you can call it. I think they're the worst.
That's not a bad thing for fantasy.
Yeah. I think Lopez and Lynn are going to put on an okay show.
Yeah.
But there's just not enough there to make for a team. But yeah, this is exactly what you want for fantasy. You want to see
opportunity.
You know, guys come out of nowhere and have Lance Stevenson in his prime lines and things like that.
All right.
Whew, that division was a doozy.
That division is not good. We have, I believe, 2 divisions left. I believe we have the Central and the Pacific division. So some big names there. You know, the 2 championship favorites, which not all that interesting for fantasy.
No.
But there are some interesting teams left. We've got exactly 2 weeks until the start of the season. I think we're going to go 2 times a week from here on out because we need to get these previews done. We got to get ready for the season. We got to get you make sure that you're all set up.
Yeah, and I think one of the things we can move from the previews is like team construction, because that's what I've been very interested in, especially categories league.
Mm-hmm.
This, unlike football, there's a lot of ways to build a winner.
Football, it's just get your best players, and even head-to-head points. It's just get the guys that are going to get the most points.
Get the assists.
But here,
there's a lot of different ways to win.
In a category-based or roto league, you need to build a team that makes sense, so we will do a podcast specifically devoted to that concept, I think.
Yeah, we can talk about the different punting strategies, and that might be the way you go, but,
All right, that's going to do it, Joe. Oof. Thank you.
You're welcome.
For being here.
Anytime.
We'll see you next time. Bye.